Hey gang, well, good evening. You made it through the day. Congratulations. Snowflakes and all. So, well done. I'll try and keep you awake tonight. It's so dangerous to give preachers topics that they like. And I do like these questions. I like the questions of, can God build a wall so big that He cannot tear it down? I mean, I think those are intriguing, and I can tell by your responses that all of you feel the same way. That those are things that while you're driving down the road, you're asking yourself, and you're wondering, yeah, how big would that wall have to be? And you're asking yourself those questions about, well, if God really loves people, then why does God make mosquitoes? I mean, these are the questions that have literally plagued mankind since the beginning. I mean, these are difficult questions to answer. If God has the power, right, to make everything right, why doesn't He do it? So sometimes, and Matt is right on. There are a lot of people who ask those questions simply because they don't want an answer. Sometimes the Pharisees would come to Jesus and they'd say, "Teacher, show us a sign!" Right? Because why? They really wanted to believe. No, they didn't want to believe. What they wanted is precisely what Jesus gave them, and that was an excuse not to. Right? Wanted to make sure that they didn't have a reason to believe. And so Jesus said, "Nope, sorry, not going to do that. No rabbits out of the hat today, boys. See you later. So long. Farewell." And they said, "You know what? I knew He couldn't do it." Right? There are some people who ask questions that set the bar so high that they believe they're safe to ever have to answer the question. One that you come up with oftentimes, "Well, you know what? If God were real, then why doesn't He show Himself to me? You know, if God would just come down and talk to me, then I'd believe in Him." Yeah, you sure would. But that's not what God's trying to do. That's contrary to God's purpose. God's trying to build faith. He's not trying to force everyone to believe. Okay? God's done that in the past. Came down, people saw Him. Yeah. Didn't work out so well for them. Surprise. Okay? God has a purpose. God has a plan. But sometimes those questions that are thrown around are tossed about not because they're genuine issues, but because they will try to set the bar so high that God can't possibly get over it. And therefore, I don't have to believe. There's a lot of people that way. But what they do is when they offer up those sorts of questions that seemingly cannot be answered, what they do is they present a stumbling block to those who are trying to figure something out. Okay. So if there is a God who claims, or who is, what the Bible claims Him to be, well, how does that work exactly? I mean, one of the Jehovah's Witnesses will knock on your door and they'll show you great literature, right, about the Garden of Eden 2.0, and how we're all going to be happy and live there together with lions and tigers and bears. And so they show you all the literature, right? And they say, because God doesn't want you to suffer. And like, God doesn't like suffering? No, God doesn't want you to suffer. God wants you to... Well then, why has He allowed Jesus to suffer? And was He perfected through the things which He suffered? And is suffering also necessary for us to prove that we're worthy of the kingdom of God, for which indeed we are suffering? I wonder if you've checked out our literature, right? There are no easy answers. Now, we are going to work on this topic tonight. But I want you to consider first, a couple of things. First off, who's asking you that question? You need to answer it, but you need to know, first of all, who's asking it. Why are they asking it? Okay. It's not going to change your answer, but I want you simply to be aware of what you're trying to accomplish with that person. Who's asking the question and why are they asking? Maybe they want an excuse not to believe. That's possible. Okay? Maybe they're just trying to make you look silly. Okay? That's possible too. Okay? Maybe they really don't know. The only way you're going to be able to sort out for sure into which of those categories they fall is by answering the question. And then you got to figure out, based on their response, I mean, they'll tell you which one of those categories they fall into. But we have to deal with the question nonetheless, because if what we believe is true, there's an answer for those questions. Right? And so we need to work through that. We're going to deal with one of them tonight. I'm going to show you a couple of ways that you can sort through those categorically. When those sorts of questions pop up, a couple of things you want to consider, which we may talk about later. The first is you really have to carefully examine the presuppositions written into the question. Okay. You really have to consider a lot of these questions are based on suppositions that themselves are contradictory. So the wall question is a great illustration of that. Can God build a wall so tall that He cannot break it down? Well, of course, that seems impossible, right? Because God can do anything, can't He? So of course God can build a wall so big that He cannot... Oh, wait. Because if He cannot, then He can't... And so, oh! And so they say, see, it's impossible to be all-powerful. But what they deny is that the character of God is consistent. See, what they've done is they've made a presupposition about God that He's self-contradictory in nature. And therefore, they've asked you to answer a question which itself is unanswerable because of the presupposition about God. Does that make sense? If you ask me, Mark, if you could fly, how high could you go? Well, that's a nonsense question because I can't fly, right? It's contrary to my nature. It doesn't make any sense. So they've made an assumption which is self-contradictory, and then they want you to figure it out for them. Okay? Watch the presuppositions that are built into the questions. Okay? They're sneaky, they're subtle, and they're often clouded by emotion. Okay? Second thing that you really want to pay attention to is what would the alternate be? See, it's easy to point out that I don't like the system the way it is, right? This seems wrong to me. This seems unfair. We're going to talk about teenagers. This seems unfair. This doesn't seem right to me. This seems totally wrong. And if God loved us, He would do it differently, okay? So what's the alternative? Would your alternative be more fair? Would it be more reasonable? We want to consider those things. Well, what would happen if? And I think you'll really be surprised by the answer to that question. So we want to look at those two things in particular in regards to this question. Be aware that oftentimes people don't ask things for their stated reasons. Okay? You still need to answer the question honestly. You need to answer the question compassionately. But sometimes they're asking you a different question than the one that they pose. And so just be aware of those things. We went through a whole bunch of them on Interman Radio. I think I put it on a bulletin back series at one point. Matt made mention to that. If going through those and answering those questions is helpful to you, I would encourage you to check out the Interman Radio website. You can download the free app. Currently, we're doing a series on raising children or training parents. We can't decide which one of the two it is, but that's what we're doing currently. But there's an apologetic series in there where we go through a number of these questions and answer them to our satisfaction, and hopefully that will be helpful to you as well. Some guys are really asking... because they want to know, and we want to help them. You can turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 20. We'll get there eventually. So the question is one of the more slippery ones. And that, the one that that Matt gave me is, if God is all-powerful, if He is all-knowing, if He is all-compassionate, why does God allow bad things to happen to little kids? Right? To the innocent. Now, that's a tough question, isn't it? I mean, why does God allow bad things to happen? We can kind of wrap our minds around, well, okay, God would allow bad things to happen. A lot of bad things happen, but so many of them are self-inflicted, aren't they? Okay, so we've got somebody to blame in that case. If, you know, if there's little kids have to put up with bad parents, right? Or people who are innocent, you know, find themselves the unfortunate victim of drunk driving. That's the result of someone else's decision that results in the harm or the suffering of the innocent. And we all think that's unfortunate, don't we? Sure. I mean, that tugs at our heartstrings, doesn't it? I mean, frankly, I hate to see little kids that have to pay the consequences for other people's stupidity. There's enough stupidity in the world to go around. It's a shame that sometimes little kids, and oftentimes, little kids end up paying the price for somebody else's, you know, bad judgment. That's unfortunate, okay? And that tugs at us, right? One other thing, as you're going through these questions, in this setting here, I'm not going to demonstrate a particularly great degree of empathy, because what we've done is we've taken the thing out of the real world, right? And we've isolated it and sterilized the question. And so now we can pick it apart at our leisure tonight academically. But when some little kid, you know, has to bear the consequence for somebody else's sin, or if they have to, you know, if they're caught up in something like a natural disaster or something of that nature, or a birth defect or something along those lines where they might suffer? Those are hard questions to answer. So we're going to do that tonight in a fairly objective and detached manner. Please be aware that if you're working through this question with somebody, they might have personal experience in that area, and for them it is not simply an academic exercise. They may be genuinely hurting because they know that kid. So, anyway, just please be aware of that. And if I seem non-compassionate, or we're even going to have some fun with this tonight, it's because we have the luxury of examining the question in that environment. Okay, but you may not want to tell all my jokes tonight if you're answering that question to somebody who's in that situation. All right. Some of them will probably be really funny anyway, but maybe not all of them. We don't want to do them all. The first assumption, I mean, if people who are innocent, and little kids are a great example of that, if they're caught in something, in some terrible disaster, and they suffer as a result of it, why would that be, why is it incompatible with a belief in God as we have defined Him? Why is that? Why is that incompatible? Why will that not work with God? If God is all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful, why doesn't that work? Phil, why doesn't that work?
I think it's because we assign all-knowing, all-compassion, all-powerful, how it applies to us that way.
Right, so what's the indictment against God? He's not like us. He's not like us? What else? Somebody would say, you know what, that's not fair. Yeah, God's not like, that's not fair, right? That's not fair to that kid. That's not fair to that person. They're innocent. What did they do to deserve that thing, right? So that's not fair. That's the first thing that's built into this, question. It's the first presupposition that we have to consider, is the indictment that that's not fair. Okay. So we should ask, well, what's fair? I mean, That's a just question, isn't it? What's fair? In Matthew chapter 20, Jesus tells this great parable of the landowner who went out and he hired some laborers for his vineyard, right? And he agreed with them first thing in the morning. He said, "Hey, you guys looking for work?" And they said, "Yeah." And he said, "Great, I'm looking for workers. How about we do a deal? You work for me today, I'll give you a denarius at the end of the day." And they said, "Deal." Okay, so off they went to work that day in the vineyard, right? And you know how the parable goes. He goes out again at the ninth hour and the 11th hour and all throughout the day, okay, until at the 11th hour, he goes out and he hires some more guys. And he says, "Hey, you guys want to work for me?" They said, "Yeah." He said, "Great, come on to the vineyard and I will pay you what is right." And they said, "Okay," right? So out they go. The day ends and the landowner calls everybody in. He tells the foreman, "Call the guys who were hired last and pay them first." And so they all file in, you know, they're feeling good about the day. And he says, "Pay them a denarius." I said, "Okay." And so he puts a denarius into each of their hands. And "All right, we got a denarius." Right. And the guys at the back of the line who are called at the beginning of the day, they look at that and they say, "Dude, this looks good for us. You know what I'm saying? Those guys got a denarius and they work 1 hour. We're going to get paid today." And so they get, finally, it's their turn, their hands out. "One denarius. Thank you very much. Next." All of a sudden they grumbled, didn't they? "What'd you get?" "I got a denarius." "What'd you get?" "A denarius." "What'd he get?" "He got a denarius." "How about it?" "Denarius. They only work 1 hour a day." That's exactly how they talk. Right. Why are they upset? And I love how the landowner, because they grumble and, you know, he says, so he takes up their argument in verse 13. He answered and said to one of them, "Friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Didn't we agree and spit shake about a denarius at the beginning of the day? That was the deal, right?"
Yeah.
"Take what's yours, go your way. I wish to give to this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own?"
Yeah.
"Or is your eye envious?"
Uh-huh.
That's a great question, isn't it? Have I wronged you? Did I not give you what was fair? It's so tempting to view what I deserve based on my perception of what others have. I mean, if it were fair, I would have that too. Right? If life were fair, if life were fair, you know, I would have that. I would be this. I would be that thing. You know, if life were fair. But it isn't fair, is it? Well, what's fair is never determined by what somebody else has. Jesus had a great statement to Peter in John chapter, I think it's 20, where he says, says, "Peter, the day is coming when other men are going to gird you and take you where you do not wish to go," speaking the kind of death by which Peter is going to glorify God. And so Peter's a little perturbed at that, and he says, you know, talking about John, he says, "What about that guy?" And Jesus' response to him is great. He says, "If I wish him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You do your job. You follow me." So it doesn't matter what that guy gets. Where is fairness? Where is the standard of fairness? There is a measure of justice, which we'll talk about in just a moment, but it is not the measure of what someone else has or does or receives or is. Okay? You can't make a case that, "God, you have to be fair with me, and if you don't give me what they have, then that's not right and just, and you are, and therefore you're not the God you claim to be." One thing I think is also worth noting is all of these types of questions presuppose, strangely enough, a biblical God. Okay. Lewis makes this observation. All those questions are directed to a God which is all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-loving. That is, the only God that fits those criteria is the biblical God. Interesting, isn't it? But if that's the case, right, if he could only see things our way, then things would be fair. Everybody would get, exactly what everybody else has or what they believe to be fair themselves. But why stop there? If God allows much, one might think that's unfair. If God allows little to someone else, they might think that's unfair. And now I want to talk about teenagers. Some of you have had them. Some of you were one. But I'm going to use teenagers, and I apologize, teenagers, ahead of this, because I'm going to cast you in a very poor stereotypical light. So I'm just giving you a preemptive apology, right? Because what happens when your 16-year-old teenager wants to borrow the car, right? And they say, "Dad, I told you, I apologize in advance," right? "Dad, if you love me, you would totally let me drive the car tonight," right? And what does Dad say? No. "Dad," right? Because in the eyes of that teenager, what? Dad has the keys, which makes him all powerful, right? "Dad, you have to give me the key. You let so-and-so take the car last week, and they went to the thing, and now I want to go to the thing too. So you have to give them to me," right? Otherwise, what? "Dad, you're not." Exactly. And we all know that Dad should, above all things, be fair, right? Okay. Do you suppose Dad has a reason that he doesn't want to hand the keys over to Junior tonight? No. And then we go to round two. "But Dad, I thought you loved me." Right? If justice and fairness doesn't do it, then certainly we can appeal to God on the basis of His boundless compassion, can we not? Of course we can, right? "You don't love me." That's it, right? Right, so all the emotions begin to, and tears start to fall, right? And they're welling up, and "Dad is unloving. I can't believe that he hates me." And so, right? And so, "Do you know this is going to ruin my life?" Right? "Don't you understand, Dad? This is a very big deal, and this is so important to me. And if you don't give me exactly when I want it, then you don't care." You don't, this is the third step. "You don't understand me," right? You know what they've just claimed that Dad is? He is unloving, he is unjust, and he is not all powerful. You couldn't, no. See, "You don't care about me. If you cared about me, then you would." Now, anytime somebody begins their question or their statement to you with the idea, "If you loved me, then you would," red flags should pop up immediately, right? Say yes. Yes. If you loved me, then you would. See, that's danger sign, right? Because what they're trying to do is manipulate. Okay? Here's the problem. Junior does not have to deal with the responsibilities that parents do. Parents have to make those decisions with a much larger scope, right? Rather than the narrow desire of the individual. Okay? And so they have to think in much broader terms, don't they? See, the child is incapable of viewing things as a parent because they aren't one. How ridiculous is it to say, "Lord, I know what you would do based on the fact that you are all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful. Because I'm none of those things," right? Does that make any sense at all? From our perspective, humanity is not all-loving, all-knowing, and all-powerful. How could we possibly advise God how He should be those three things? Does that make any sense to you at all? No. No. The question sounds good, but there's a lot of things that are baked into it from the get-go that make it just absolutely unworkable. That's one. Okay? We don't know We cannot presume to know what the restraints of being all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful would be. Much less than a teenager can put themselves in the place of a parent and know how a parent should act in those same circumstances. But you can see the arguments are the same as a raving teenager. Right? I want what I want, and I want it now. And if you don't give me what I want, then what will I do? I will withhold relationship, right? I will run to my room, slam the door, throw myself, and cry myself to sleep on my gargantuan pillow. That's what I'm going to do. We'll have more to talk about later, you and I. Right? See, it's a temper tantrum. Okay. Now, if you're a teenager and dad won't give you the keys to the car, it seems perfectly reasonable, doesn't it? That dad doesn't love you. Because from your perspective, your whole life just ended. I mean, that's it for you, right? I mean, because of this setback, you are probably not going to get the girl. That's going to ruin the rest of your life, more than likely. And could quite possibly, you could be homeless, you know, and in a shelter because, I mean, it crushed you, right? I mean, this is a big deal for you. And that's oftentimes, you know, when you only see one thing, that's your whole world. Okay? So just be aware, when people ask the question, sometimes that is their whole world. Okay, now I'm actually going to get to the part that is not empathetic. So turn to John chapter 9. John chapter 9. Bad things happening to innocent people. As he passed by, in verse 1, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, they said, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was in order that the works of God might be displayed in him." Okay. That's going to be a hard one for your objector to swallow. Kid was born blind. Right. That doesn't sound fair. Most everybody else gets to see, right? But not this kid. He has to live with that. Right? Other kids teased him. Right? I mean, this makes his life more difficult, doesn't it? We're not trying to downplay the effect of suffering. Suffering's a real thing. Okay? And in this case, this guy has suffered some, hasn't he? He was born blind. The scriptures point out to us the purpose of his blindness. It's not to make him suffer. The purpose of his blindness is so the glory of God might be manifested through him. So, does God have a right over the clay to make what he desires? Turn to Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9. In verse 14, Paul asks this question of himself and of his audience. He says, "What shall we say then? There is no injustice with God, is there? May it never be. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I have mercy. I will have compassion on whom I have compassion. So then it does not depend on the man who wills or the man who runs, but on God who has mercy. The scripture says to Pharaoh, for this very purpose I raised you up to demonstrate my power in you and that my name might be proclaimed throughout the whole earth. So then he has mercy on whom he desires and he hardens whom he desires. You will say to me then, why does he still find fault for who resists his will?" Okay. "On the contrary, who are you, O man, who answers back to God? The thing molded will not say to the molder, 'Why did you make me like this?' will it? Does not the potter have a right over the clay to make from the same lump one vessel for honorable use and another for common use?" The answer is yes. I mean, The answer is yes. God can do what he wants with what is his own, right? And you are his own. Okay? Now, Paul gives us this look at, does God have a right to do that? He certainly does. Okay, we don't have time tonight, and some other time it's worth looking into. God is trying to make vessels for honorable use, prepared beforehand for glory. Okay, but he allows the will of the individual, like Pharaoh, that if his heart is hardened, God is willing to make a vessel of wrath prepared for destruction. Okay? Both vessels will glorify God. And God has the right over them to do what he wishes with what is his own. Now, I realize probably to the person who's asking you this question, why do bad things happen to innocent people? That may not be a satisfactory answer to them, but it is true nonetheless. God has a right to do what he wishes with what is his own. Now, you will get to decide whether or not you're a vessel of wrath prepared for destruction or a vessel of glory or a vessel of mercy prepared for glory. But God's going to be glorified either way. He'll either be glorified through that vessel prepared for glory, or he will be glorified in the destruction of those vessels prepared for that purpose. But God will be glorified because the clay belongs to him. He made us. Now, God has, because of his love, he has allowed us a voice in that decision. Okay? But when it applies to our question, why does God allow the suffering of the innocent? God is able and within his rights to do what he wishes with what is his own. What is his own? We are. Okay? So, God is not outside of justice to do what he wishes with what belongs to him. Okay? And we'll just throw that in briefly. From the sense of justice, that settles the issue. Okay? What would it be? So we've examined the presuppositions in the question. Now I want to ask you, what would it be if we did the other side? What would it be if God listened to those objections and he said, you know what? You're right. You know, you got a point there. I should have seen that coming. You know, sure, we can send suffering, bad things on bad people, but I should have thought about that. You know, suffering for good people, for innocent people, that's kind of backwards. You know what? We're going to stop that policy altogether. How about that? Let's think about the alternatives now. What would that be? What would the alternative be if God said, all right, no more suffering for innocent people? Well, in the first place, a lot of people might become Christians, but not for the right reason. Yeah? I think a lot of people do become Christians for that reason. Right? So a lot of people are kind of subtly sold the idea that if you're a Christian, life is going to go well for you. Right? That if God's happy with you, then good things are going to come your way. You're going to get that promotion at work. You know, your dog's going to live longer, things like that. That's just not true. Okay? But it would create a disincentive for people to seek God for the right reasons. Okay? There's another interesting, this I picked up from a psychologist named Jordan Peterson. But he made this interesting observation. I don't want to point them out or make them uncomfortable, but you may know kids who are born with birth defects. Okay. That's a hard thing. That's a tough thing. What if we were to change? What if God would not have allowed that? Because the only way to avoid suffering there are two ways to avoid suffering. You can either lock them in a rubber room, or you can make them invulnerable. right? So when you say we just lock innocent people in a rubber room, well, that's not really compassionate either, is it? What if we make them invulnerable? You know what you do? Is you change the individual. You change them. You know, part of who we are is our vulnerabilities. If you take away the vulnerabilities, well, then you would have removed suffering, right? But you would change the person. You'd change them. You wouldn't have them anymore. You know, those people would be lost. So, you know, I know one young man who was born deaf. And thankfully, he now has the ability to hear. Okay, through technology, he can hear. But you know, it's still a handicap for him. What if we were to take that away from him? You know, you wouldn't have that little boy anymore. It sounds great, doesn't it? Let's just remove suffering from everybody. Well, at least the good people. But you know, if you did that, you'd lose those people. They wouldn't be the people that God made them to be. Now, somebody may offer an objection. Well, that's easy for you to say. You don't have to deal with that issue. But a lot of them would agree too. If you make them invulnerable, you lose them. They're not the same person anymore. You've made them into someone that they aren't, right? And that's a part of them. I mean, if God makes you emotionally, right, impervious to pain and suffering, you're not the same person anymore. You lose that individual. What if only the naughty get suffering? That sounds good, doesn't it? We'll leave it for just those who deserve it. If you remove suffering, there's, in fact, a whole episode of Inner Man Radio is devoted to suffering. And you thought they were all about that, didn't you? There's a little joke there, right? If you were to remove suffering, right, you know what else you have to remove? If you take suffering away, see, it's like, you know, it's very much like economies or floating boats. If you raise one side artificially, the other side goes down, doesn't it? I mean, there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction. And we would like to believe that we can just spend without consequence, right? But there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction, won't there? Sure there will, right? There's a balance. What happens if you remove suffering? Do you know what else happens as a result of that? And this surprised me when it occurred to me. You know what else you lose? You lose virtue. Think of what are the great virtues? Rob, give me a great virtue. What's a great quality in people? What quality makes you, it restores your faith in humanity when you see? Don't give him any hints. He's perfectly capable. What's a good quality about humanity? You don't know. You can't find one? Think of your heroes, right? What do they have? Think of your heroes. What's one quality that your heroes have that's worth imitating? This man needs heroes. What's a quality worth imitating in mankind? Compassion? Kindness? Courage? Work ethic? Yeah, the ability to overcome, to see something through. What? Generosity? Humility? What? Understanding. You know, most all of those virtues vanish in the absence of suffering. What is integrity, right? If there's no price to pay for being an honest man, where's heroism if there's no danger? Right? Where's the virtue? Where's the goodness in someone who's truthful if it's not to their own detriment? I mean, if they tell the truth because that is to their advantage, well, we don't look at that and say, well, there is an honest man. Right? But when it's to their disadvantage and they're an honest man, then we say, that man has virtue. Right? Courage. Generosity. Right? To whom are we to be generous? Those who suffer. Do you realize other people's suffering gives you an opportunity to demonstrate virtue? Gives them an opportunity to demonstrate overcoming? If you remove suffering, if you remove pain, the removal of virtue is the unintended consequence. If you have, you know, if you help someone, if you deal with someone who is, you know, who has been harmed through no fault of their own, you know, that changes you. You become a different person as a result of that. Yeah. Some of you, you know, physical disabilities are more easily identified. Emotional disabilities are harder to put our finger on, aren't they? But you know, as a result of those things, you're changed also. Why was it that this guy was born blind? Was his parents' fault? Did he sin? Did his parents sin? What was it? None of those. God's trying to do something bigger. And when somebody, you know, as a spiritual teenager, you know, shakes their fist in the face of God and says, Lord, if you love them, you would. The Lord must just shake his head and say, you have no idea what I'm trying to do. No idea. Turn to Romans 5. Romans 5, look at verse 7. One will hardly die, one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would dare even to die. God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. For the good man someone would perhaps dare even to die, but what about the man who is not so good? Do you notice here that someone innocent suffered? And you know what? That's not fair, is it? Somebody innocent suffered, and that's not fair. Is it fair that Jesus has to suffer? I mean, if anybody was ever innocent, it would have been him, right? Jesus suffered. Jesus is the ultimate example of bad things happening to good people. To those who are totally and perfectly innocent. If anybody deserved to walk without the fret of life, without the harassment of bad decisions and other... I mean, if anyone had the right to... It was him. And yet, it was the good pleasure of the Father that he should suffer. That bad things should happen to innocent people. It demonstrates, among other things, it demonstrates God's tremendous love for mankind. Lots of times, God still shows his love to mankind the same way. Suffering has a couple of very important purposes as it applies to Christianity, which are somewhat off topic, but I think have relevance. One is it gives us credibility with the people that we talk to. The reason why Paul continually suffered every place he went is because it was the fastest way that he could gain credibility with those people. Paul was innocent. He did not deserve that. Okay. But he was willing to do it anyway. Not because it was fair or just, but because of the doors that it opened as a result. If God allowed His Son to suffer for mankind, do you think He wouldn't allow we as sons to suffer for the same purpose? If God demonstrated His love to mankind in that He allowed His only begotten Son to die on their behalf, don't you think God might continue the program by allowing these sons also to give their lives on behalf of the world? Sure. Okay. Suffering has a purpose. It's a necessary purpose. When it applies to those who are innocent, we can't put ourselves in the place that belongs to God and say, Lord, I know what You should do, being all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful. Okay. We just can't do that. God has a right to do what He wishes with what is His own, and everything is His own. But thirdly, consider what it would mean if we artificially forced that to happen. If God were to step in and say, okay, all right, from now on, all the innocent, they don't suffer. It would be a tragedy. It would be far less loving than the system God currently has in place. You know, to strip mankind of virtue, to strip him of all of those, of all of the things that lead him and point him to God, it would be unthinkable. Anybody who raises that question, they just haven't thought about it for longer than 2 minutes. Okay. It's popular in our culture, it's popular to throw that out as if that supposedly is an end to every argument. That, you know, that's checkmate, and so now you have to give up the field because they've asked the unanswerable question. That's absolutely not true. And I don't want you to feel like that's true. There are answers for those questions. Look for those two things. Look for the presuppositions that are baked into the question to begin with. And then oftentimes ask the question, well, what would the alternative be? And that'll help you sort through a lot of those. God has given us the system which allows us and affords us the greatest opportunity to come in contact with His love, that mankind might be reconciled to God, no exceptions. There's no other reasonable alternative. There's no other better plan. What's here is here because that is the best way forward. And that includes the persecution of the world. That includes the heartache. That includes the, you know, the seemingly random accident. All of those things. I got to tell you one more story. And then I'll be done. There's a family in Spokane, and some of you have met them. And Roger wouldn't mind if I told this story because I've asked him. And I've told it before, and he was okay with that. They have 12 children. Okay? One of them is dead. The 12th of their children, her name is Naomi. And I have, in part, Naomi to thank for Roger Grove and his family being a part of the congregation in Spokane. Naomi was born premature with a number of complications. Okay. She lived only a few days. Okay. She was on a respirator, and they made the very difficult decision to try and remove her from that respirator, understanding what the consequences might be. Okay. All of the family got to see her. All the kids, mom and dad, everybody was there. And they held her as she died. It caused Roger and his wife Susan to rethink Christianity. It was largely because of that experience that they separated from the megachurch that they'd kind of been going to in Coeur d'Alene. reconnected with some old friends who themselves had made acquaintance with me in the meantime, and they began to fellowship with us. And reestablish Christianity. Was that fair? Now, I know not every story ends that way. Okay. But you don't know how it ends either. Was it just? Was it loving? Sometimes we can't yell at mom and dad and say, if you loved us, you would. God loves you tremendously. And the system that He's put in place is designed to show you that love and to try and elicit the same from mankind. You need to be able to answer those questions. Okay. They have answers. You should be able to sort your way through them. But sometimes what God does in the moment looks further down the road. God is not trying. Another common mistake people make is they think that God has to make everything right and just in the here and now. That's not right. God will make everything right and just, but not in the here and now. God's thinking longer term. Okay? It's not so important to God that you have everything in this life that somebody else has. Okay? It'll all be made right in the end, but this ain't the end. Okay? So, that's what I want to tell you. God genuinely loves you. And the fact that He allows that is proof of that love.